We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Mike Gorman, and you're listening to Green with Envy with Will, Adam, and Greg.
What's good, everybody? Today on the show, we are joined by the host of Hoops Tonight, the one and only Jason Timpf. It's Greg Menakis. He's Adam Taylor. This is Green with Envy. You know the deal. Let's lock in. Everybody, welcome into another Thursday live stream here on Green with Envy. This visual is a little different. We've got some people filling in different roles here. I'm Greg Menakis, filling in for Will Weir as the host of the show. Adam Taylor, familiar face on the screen, but we do have a guest here. So I'm filling in for Will. You know, that's like that's a downgrade for sure. But Jason, you're kind of playing the role of me today. And I want to compare that to, like, say you traded Marcus Smart, but you ended up with Drew Holiday. I think that's what we have going on here. So you're a significant upgrade over me. So I appreciate you joining us, man.
Oh man, I think you're selling yourself short there. I just want to say, are you guys having trouble containing optimism at all? With the way this is all shaping out east, with the injuries and with the way the matchups have gone, like do you have to have like little pep talks with yourself? Like, all right, everybody relax. We still have to win the games.
Adam, how are you feeling?
I'm English, man. I'm miserable as shit constantly, so I'm okay. I'm kind of even at the moment. I find it hard when I talk about other teams and like we're talking about matchups, right? Like, who are you going to get in the first round? And I'm like, whoever it is getting smoked. And then I have to remind myself, like, that's not a guarantee. You can't just go into every day like I'm covering an NBA Finals team because you just don't know. So that part's difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like everything's breaking right for the Celtics. And today's topic is actually the biggest concerns for the Boston Celtics. I think the Miami Heat have been a concern for the Celtics throughout, you know, this entire season on all the big podcasts. People talk about the zombie Heat and all that. And Jimmy Butler's injury last night, I kind of want to start the conversation there. Shams tweeted out, this is an MCL injury, probably going to miss multiple weeks. Giannis is obviously out. Julius Randle is out. So there are a lot of injuries in the Eastern Conference right now. Joel Embiid is struggling with that knee. So Jason, you know, how are you seeing the path to the finals for the Celtics right now? Are you also just like, it couldn't have gotten any easier?
This is an absolute perfect set of circumstances. And one of the main reasons why, in my opinion, is like, I do think Denver's a little better than Boston. I have them number one in my contender list. I don't think it's a substantial gap, though. I think we're talking about a very small gap. And factors like the Nuggets potentially going to war with a LeBron James and Anthony Davis led team that does not want to get swept again. And that potentially being some form of longer, more drawn out series between the what's waiting for you on the other end is a Suns team that beat you the last two times they played and a Timberwolves team that is another massive front line that could give them issues potentially. And then obviously you've got Dallas and the Clippers and Oklahoma City and I believe the Pelicans that are going to be waiting for them in the conference finals. And so they just could be in for a much more physically demanding next 6 weeks than Boston is going to be in for. The especially when you look at guys like Al Horford and Jrue Holiday in particular, or a little bit older, Kristaps Porzingis and some of the injuries that he's dealt with this year, if they can buy themselves little 4 or 5 day stretches to rest in between series, that could go a long way. And like Miami, you know, Miami, I believe Boston would have beat Miami. I think this is a better Boston team than last year, and I think this is a lesser Miami team than last year. That said, Jimmy Butler being out just kind of removes that alpha dog element, because that, you know, is half of the battle. It's Eric Spoelstra's schematics kind of playing Boston into their worst tendencies, and then it's Jimmy Butler kind of sapping your best players of confidence by bringing his kind of, you know, aura to the table. And so, you know, what really concerned me, and I don't know if you guys caught this play, but there was a, first of all, I really enjoyed that game last night. That was a fun game. That Sixers Heat game was just such a great game. But there was a late game fourth quarter turnover where I can't remember who it was, but someone was running out the other way and Jimmy was like doing that weird speed walk to get back on defense. And I'm like, oh no, he can't even run. And I'm
looking like prime Kendrick Perkins.
That was on a big play in the game too. And so when I saw that, I was like, oh no, like this is not like a, he can play through it type of injury.
Yeah. Adam, what are your thoughts right now with Jimmy Butler going down? I mean, the Heat might not even make it out of this playing game against the Bulls, right? The Bulls playing decent basketball right now. Before we get to questions in the chat and before we talk about the topics that we kind of had on the plan today, how are you feeling with Jimmy Butler going down with this injury?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it just destroys their offense that takes the hit? I've just got the notes here. A lot of Jimmy not being there destroys Miami's offense. And me and Will spoke about this yesterday. One of the big things for me personally is there's a lack of on-ball creation for Miami at the best of times. You trade Kyle Lowry for Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier is more of a scoring guard than he is like a primary playmaker. He can create for others and he does have some off-the-dribble creation, but he's out injured with a neck injury at the moment. You've got Max Strus is gone from last season, so the floor spacing is a little bit more janky than it has been. You're not really there in terms of on-ball creation. A lot's running through Bam in elbow DHOs and running some zoom actions, creating stuff out of 21s and stuff on the wings. But in terms of actual on-ball creation, all you had was Tyler Hero and then Jimmy Butler doing stuff off-ball and getting open for some actions that are going to feed him as a primary scorer. When you take away that primary scorer, you're putting so much more emphasis onto Hero being not only your primary on-ball guy that's creating everything or breaking down half-court offenses through pick and roll and stuff, but now he's also your number one scoring option. That's just so much weight on Hero for the player that he is, that especially if you're looking to go up against the number one seed in the East, I just think it's put a lot of pressure on guys that would usually be tertiary options to really step up into a bigger role that makes them kind of nullified in terms of their overall impact.
Yeah, and you know, I think with the Heat, when you look at the matchup against the Bulls here, do you think there's any world in which Chicago gets out of this matchup? What percentage you would put on that?
Of course there's a chance. I think Chicago is specifically kind of geared up for this too, in the sense that like Tyler, you saw at the end of the game last night, because Bam Adebayo is just not quite at the point yet where he can kind of comfortably generate offense on his own, it really came down to Tyler Herro high ball screens. And if he could get separated from his on-ball guy and get to that, you know, 1-2 into a pull-up jump shot, that was pretty much their offense late in the game.
It wasn't efficient.
Yeah, exactly. And like the strength of Chicago, and I don't know if you guys just saw the report, but it looks like the swelling got a little bit better with Caruso, so there's a chance he plays tomorrow. But the strength with Chicago is their perimeter speed. And they are going to have a quick athletic guard on Tyler the entire night. You guys mentioned the shooting. Like, there's just so many more guys that you can close out short on with Miami this year than there were last year. And I think that just kind of puts them in a bind. And like, they're going to be, you know, even stretching forward into the Celtics series, like if they were to win, there will be janky stretches where, you know, Spo goes zone and they pick up full court and, you know, the Jays turn it over a few times and some things kind of get ugly. But there's a simple firepower shortage there that's just going to eventually rear its ugly head, and they're just going to run out of ways to generate offense.
For sure. All right. Well, you know, this is a live stream, so everybody that's watching here got some good numbers. People watching this stream here, I wonder if that has anything to do with our guest. Today's topic, we're going to talk about what are the biggest concerns we have for the Boston Celtics during this quest for Banner 18. We were kind of thinking of this more from, you know, internal perspectives and just like the typical fan anxieties that we have watching our team day in and day out, where certain things just stand out to us. Like, for example, second topic we're going to get into is Jaylen Brown's free throws. That's just something that, for me, watching the Celtics every single day, I just don't believe Jaylen Brown's ever going to make the front end of a free throw. It's just, it's like, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. When it does happen, I feel like I'm not watching the TV. So the first thing we're going to start with today, which has been much ballyhooed, is the crunch time.
Ballyhooed?
Well, hey, man. I feel like I got to give you some shouts. You know, we got an English person on the show. I feel like that's about as English.
I'm sorry, man, but I've never heard that word in my life.
So we're going to start talking about the crunch time offense. I'm going to kick it to you, Adam, first. Right now, you know, you've done more film study than this year than I've done in my entire life. What are you seeing for the Boston Celtics crunch time offense? I know the numbers aren't actually bad, but what is just your gut feel when you watch them the last 5 minutes of a game?
Yeah, it slows down a little bit. The majority of the game, they like to run early offense. And we can go into that at a different point. I've got a bunch of clips I can pull. And we've spoke about this at length as well, right? They like a lot of drag actions. They run a lot of Oklahoma on the break and stuff. But when you go down to that last like 4 minutes, 5 minutes of a game, it does slow down. You're definitely working on more high pick and roll, side pick and roll actions. The question is, why slow down an offense that's working so efficiently for the first 43 minutes of a game to then put yourself in a position down 5 minutes where things can get a little bit close? Now, I understand when you're blowing a team out by 30 and your end of bench guys are on the floor and none of them really know what they're doing because they've been in the G League all year and it's been a little bit easy. Like, you know, I'm poking fun, but when it's a tight game, you don't want that to be the slow point of the offense. You really want to keep with that what's been working from start to finish, right? So you want to keep with those early offensive actions. You want to put the ball in Derek White's hands and have Jason as a screener and then roller. You want to have that Drew Holiday short roll kicking out to somebody in the corner, because those are the things that work, start, middle, and then at end. So I think for me, the biggest concern I have is, can we go away from the isolation heavy basketball and keep with the high paced actions, the 0.5 decision making that really opens options up around the floor?
Jason, what do you see when you see the Celtics in the last 5 minutes?
So I think like some of, I agree with what Adam's saying in principle, in the sense that like, yeah, you want to try to maintain the pace and the ball and player movement that you have in the other portions of the game. I do think there's some reality to the way that intensity at the end of games gums things up.
That's fair.
There's a certain level of physicality that's allowed. Usually teams do more switching. A lot of times the pet action, like let's say you've been running like a basic, you know, screen to screener type of action out of horns at the top of the key. If you ran it 7 or 8 times during the game, when you run it in the fourth quarter, typically they've figured out what coverage they want to go to and they're going to be able to get in front of it and shut down the action. When it comes down to late game situations, like everybody gets a little ugly. That's to be expected. I run into this with Laker fans all the time where they're like, why is it that the Lakers are spamming this action or spamming that action? And it's like, you're not just going to be able to run free-flowing, five-out, beautiful basketball at the end of a game like that. By the way, what does Denver do? Denver has all this beautiful five-out ball and player movement that they use for 45 minutes. And then at the end of the game, it's Jokic Murray two-man game every single time down the floor with Aaron Gordon hawking the baseline and KCP and Michael Porter Jr. on the weak side. So at the end of the day, I think that is the direction I would like to see Boston go, in the sense that I want to see a clear hierarchy and a clear strategy for the end of the game. So let's say, for instance, it's Derek White, Jason Tatum two-man game. I want to see them be diligent and deliberate about getting to it every single time at the end of a game. That's how you build rhythm and get that. Like, there's a reason why Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic are so good at the end of those games. They know exactly what to do, regardless of which coverage they face in those situations at the end of the game. Now, for Boston, it might have a little bit more to do with the matchup. So that might involve bringing Porzingis out. Like, let's say you do run into Embiid in a conference finals. That probably ends up being more two-man game involving Porzingis, right? But it depends on the matchup. But for me, where I think Boston can get into a little bit of trouble at the end of games is there isn't a clear hierarchy sometimes. And it is sometimes a little too, you know, let's just run this action for Jrue Holiday on this play. And it's like, okay, he's your fourth best ball handler. Why does he have the ball here? You know what I mean? Like, there's a certain level of hierarchy that Boston can kind of tinker with a little bit at the end of games that I don't like. And then the last piece of it is they do not have a reliable, consistent possession by possession bully ball option.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
And what I mean by that is, like, there, and you will have Celtics fans that will tell you, and I'm curious to hear your guys' opinion, when it comes to their poor shooting nights, like whether it's the Cavs collapse or any of those losses down the stretch of the season to the Clippers or to the Bucks or to the Nuggets or to the Lakers. Like,
Jason, we call the Cavs collapse the Dean Wade game.
The Dean Wade game, yes, the Dean Wade game. But they also missed, if I remember correctly, they missed every single jump shot they took in the final 9 minutes of that game, if I remember correctly. So, like, they can go really cold with the jump shot. Now, some Celtics fans believe it's simply variance, and chances are that will work out for them in the long run. And there's some variance at play there. But I do think when you look back and you look at their final, you know, 9 or 10 losses of the year, and when 6 of them are against, you know, teams that are considered top tier contenders or teams that are in that mix at the top of the league, and they all kind of go the same way, where it's like they're capitalizing on physical advantages around the basket while the Celtics are missing jump shots. When you see that, it kind of goes to show you that there is some vulnerability to them when it comes to missing. And so from there are a couple points of optimism. I really like the post-up attack from Jaylen Brown this year. I really like when Jason Tatum looks to be physically aggressive. I like what I see there. And so for me, it's about identifying when you're psychologically not confident as a shooting team and having some sort of tweak that you go to there to try to, like, bake in physical aggression. And for me, that was always running in transition to the lane, like not running for threes, but running to the basket, attacking in the post on mismatches instead of attacking from the perimeter in mismatches, attacking the offensive glass. I think Boston can be devastating on the offensive glass with their athleticism when they want to be. It just hasn't been something that they've leaned into enough. And then lastly, cutting. like instead of constantly spotting up at the three-point line and hunting three-point shots in the drive and kick, cutting when you see those opportunities. The Celtics are a pretty low volume cut team. That's what those are the areas of opportunity where I see them to try to generate more bully ball, because they don't really have like your 6'10", 270 pound bully ball guy to go to. So they kind of have to manufacture that with the physical tools that they have.
Yeah, and the 3-point shooting numbers in the fourth quarter, Tatum shooting around 30%, Jalen shooting around 29%, Porzingis is about 33%, and you got Derek White at 45%. So our guy Will, who's the typical host of the show, he said D. White needs to be involved late, can't forget about him. And when you look at the shot distribution for all of the, you know, those are the four primary options for the Celtics. Jrue Holiday's kind of been relegated to corner shooter this year. You know, D. White is the most, he feels like the most clutch player. And I think the numbers back that up with the percentages as well. But Tatum's taking about 5 shots per game in the fourth quarter. Jalen's about 3.5. Porzingis and White are like in the 2.5 to 3 range. And I think the distribution of the shots for me is one of the things that's always kind of frustrated me, and I think frustrates a lot of fans. It does seem like the Celtics late game offense, they do run, like they kind of just spam horns a lot too. They go to that empty side pick and roll in the two-man action. But there was one game, I forget which game it was, but I think they ran horns like 7 straight possessions with Derek White, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown in that little triangle at the top. So, you know, with the way that they run the fourth quarter offense, for me, what frustrates me is that they go away from the equal opportunity idea that they run throughout the game. And it's really just like try to get Tatum shots. And he hasn't been that efficient with it. And one thing I was wondering, and I'll kick it to you, Adam, what level of the fourth quarter offense kind of getting a little gummy and just going with some more basic actions do you think is wanting to make sure that you just get a shot, right? You want to reduce the amount of turnovers. You go to some actions that, you know, aren't very high risk. If you go to that 5-out, although it can be beautiful, there's a lot of passing involved, and just, you know, you drive to the hoop, somebody could dig down and get their hand on a ball and knock it away. So how much of it do you think is just like wanting to make sure they get a shot and not necessarily the best shot or the most efficient shot?
I think this ties in well with what Jason's mentioned when he used Denver as kind of like that comparison, where Denver do go to that Murray Jokic two-man game. And the difference with Boston is Jokic is such an otherworldly passer, and he's got the size to see over when teams send doubles and triples. And Tatum's passing's really developed there, but there's not as much movement in terms of guys aren't like, this team's a lot better this year, but off-ball movement for Boston versus off-ball movement for Denver is quite night and day in terms of heady cuts, knowing when to cut. Off-ball manipulation for Denver is just a different level. It's why they're such a complete unit. So I think when you're the Celtics and you're down on that last five minutes in the clutch, and you've got that two-man game and they send two at you, or they hedge over that pick and roll, and now Tatum's got to make a read, the only option he really has is whoever's screening and rolling for him. That's his outlet, because there's nobody else cutting baseline, nobody's setting like a step screen so somebody can sink into the corner and be open there for a skip pass. So I think it's not about so much getting a shot, it's finding a quality shot without having people creating openings for themselves, without that off-ball creation for them. So then all of a sudden it gums down, because you really only have, oh, Derek White set a screen as an inverted screener. Let me kick it to D. White. D. White needs to kick it to a corner guy. But first he needs to drive and draw that low help. And if the low help stays home, now everything, you've got to reset that play. There's only 10 seconds left on the clock. And that's where it starts to get a little bit gummed up. That would be kind of like my take on that.
Specifically, what I really like about what you're mentioning in terms of the playmaking, I agree with you in terms of like, you don't have a Jokic, a guy that's going to be able to see all these cuts. And you're right, they're a team that doesn't really cut enough anyway. But this is where I really like the idea of cleared side actions. And I would like to see Tatum as the ball handler more. A lot of times they'll have Derek be the ball handler. They'll try to get a switch and then they'll dump it into Tatum. But like, I would like to see Tatum be the ball handler so that he has more opportunity to turn the corner. And if they're going to do something stupid like hedge, now all Tatum has to do is throw that behind the back pass to Derek White. And now you're in rotation. You're playing 4-on-3 with 4 awesome offensive players. And so like, but that said, when you have limited playmakers, simplify the reads. The best way to simplify the reads is to clear the side. In my opinion, one of the most frustrating things watching the Celtics this year is how often you'll see them get a matchup that they like, a specific a mismatch for, you know, a smaller guard on Tatum or a smaller guard on Jaylen Brown, and then they'll have him work on the slot. And it's like, there's a dude in the corner and a dude at the top of the key, and they're digging down in both driving lanes, and it almost baits Tatum and Brown into taking tougher contested pull-up jump shots instead of trying to look to drive. Whereas when you clear the side, at the very least, he only has to read the help defender on one side, and he can just rip through baseline and use some of his physical gifts. Because again, I think Tatum's most underrated trait is he's really strong. And I think a lot of people view him as like kind of a finesse player, but he's got real power in his game. And so like, again, like having Tatum actually have the ball so that he has more opportunity to turn the corner, and then clearing the side so he's less likely to settle, because he can rip baseline. And when he rips baseline, if he gets cut off, that's when he can turn his back and then he can start trying to bully. He can't do that in the slot when they're digging down in both driving lanes.
Yeah, I just want to add to that. Sorry, Greg. There's a really cool video from Nikias and Steve Jones where they spoke with Pop about having these empty side actions. And like, the Celtics have run empty side. They ran it a ton at the start of the season, moved away from it in the middle of the season, went back to it towards the end of the season. That tells me that that's a part of their game plan moving into the playoffs. They found that they had the data. They were just refreshing. But one of the things that Popovich said during that video was, just because you start the action with that side empty, like that empty side action, doesn't mean it has to stay empty all the way through. Once you initiate that action and you get that initial penetration, someone can filter out. And then if you've got a guy on the strong side dunker and you turn the corner off that empty side, and the guy on the dunker moves and fills in the corner, now all of a sudden you're blowing open a complete lane that way as well. And there was a game, it was one of the last games of the season, we saw Tatum come off a screen into that empty side, turn the corner, somebody cleared out, and he just got a monstrous dunk. So where Jason's going with that, in terms of just late game execution, just creating some space and allowing your best player to be your best player, that makes perfect sense. The issue is, we don't see that happen often enough in the clutch. But Will had a really good point yesterday. This is a team that rarely found themselves in the clutch this year. So it's really hard to work on your clutch time offense when you're blowing teams out by 25 to 30 points a night. It's one of those kind of catch 22 situations.
Yeah, that's honestly what freaks me out a little bit about their playoff run, is what if they just kick everybody's butt and then they get to Denver and end up in close games? Last thing I'll say about it, like, it's kind of just a general basketball philosophy of mine that if you're a super high level playmaker, I want you operating out of the middle of the floor. And if you're a lower level playmaker, I want you operating off the side with the cleared corner. And it's just simply because, like, so many guys, when they can't see what's on the other side of them, just immediately kind of panic and don't know how to handle it. Whereas like the super high level guys, they can kind of always feel what's happening around them and they can make those reads.
Definitely. I want to go to a question in the chat here, as this is a Thursday live stream. Drop those questions in the chat. This is from our guy Southsiders. He says, biggest Celtics advantage in the playoffs: experience, health, talent, urgency window, or pick one. Adam, what would you say right now is the Celtics' biggest advantage going into this playoffs?
I want to have to say, like, talent slash depth. I think that coming into this season, one of the biggest questions on the team was, once you get past Al Horford, is there any depth there, right? I think Peyton Pritchard really announced himself as a depth piece, a very reliable depth piece. Sam Hauser's movement shooting has announced him as a depth piece. We know he can defend better than what was originally expected of him, primarily because, you know, he was a white shooter. No one thought he was going to be able to defend. Once you go past there, I think Luke Kornet's proved himself as a good depth piece. He's really good at containing the ball handler in pick and roll. I know some people don't like that Kornet contest. I'm of the belief, if you remove the line of sight to the rim, it makes aiming your shot quite difficult. So I'm okay with that. They added Tillman as a depth piece. V's proved himself as a decent depth piece. So I think talent and depth probably what makes this team such a well-rounded unit going into the postseason.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, the health part of it is huge. We know we touched on this at the top of the show with all the people in the East being out, and the Celtics had the good fortune to be able to rest people down the stretch. Didn't play any of their top six guys the last two games of the season, and pretty much the last like 15 games of the season, they were resting a guy here or there. You know, three out of the five starters were playing, two of them were sitting, and they were doing that for quite some time, where the actual starting five didn't play as many games together as you might think. think. I think it was even less than half the games that the starting five actually started altogether. So, you know, the health part of it going into the postseason, and to Jason's point from earlier, you know, if they don't have to face much resistance going into the finals, that's going to be huge going up against a team like Denver if they do see them in the finals, just because the playoffs are such a war of attrition. And we've seen over the past with the Celtics team, they've had an issue finishing teams early, right? Even last year with the Hawks, where everybody's like, how is this game six of this series? Like, what happened? How did we get here? And it just feels like, even dating back to the bubble season, where they could have put away, they could have gone up 3-0 against the Raptors. OG Anunoby hits that three-pointer with 0.4 seconds left on the clock, and all of a sudden we're in a seven-game series. And that was the issue with that team, is they were unable to finish the job and really know how to put their foot on somebody's throat when they're down. And we're hoping that they have that, not necessarily have the dog in them, but have the experience now in order to learn from their past mistakes. And that's what I'm really hoping for. What do you think, Jason?
So I think that the fact that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have been together for so long has kind of fooled us into thinking these guys are, you know, savvy vets, when they're just not. They're guys in their early to mid-20s, or I should say mid-20s, who are like still kind of learning how to play the highest level of basketball. And like, honestly, like, I remember there was a big take last year after the Celtics lost in the conference finals. It's the same take that's been floating around pretty much every year the Celtics lose in the playoffs. It's like, should they break up the Jays? Should they break up the Jays? And I kept saying the same thing every single time, which is like, or the alternative question would be, is Jason Tatum good enough to lead a team to a championship? Those are like the two kind of canned, takey topics, right, that everyone hits. And I keep saying, like Tatum is improving by leaps and bounds every single year. You know, Jaylen Brown was a largely ineffective post-up wing last year. This year, he's been one of the most efficient post-up wings in the league. You know, like, these guys are making substantial leaps every single year, and that extends beyond their talent to their level of execution, to their level of, call it, like, their ability to play serious grown-up basketball. That improves every single year. And like, honestly, I think that they always stood to gain more by riding things out and watching that improvement and fostering that improvement than they did by trying to hunt for that elsewhere. And I'm glad that they stuck with it the way that they did. And honestly, like, we were talking about this with Colin Cowherd on Sunday night, but I loved the idea of re-signing Jrue Holiday and basically looking at this like, hey, we might get it this year, but we're sure as heck going to get one in the next few years, you know, because like, there's a certain level of just continuity and growth from Tatum. And I really do see a lot of that. Like, I don't know if you guys remember, well, obviously you guys do, you covered the team, the Celtics series last year with Miami. I really liked a lot of their half court execution in game five and game six. They were running a lot of clear side action. Jason Tatum, especially on that right side of the floor, that right block, Tatum was going to work a lot with physicality, getting closer to the rim. Honestly, if he didn't tweak his ankle, I think there's a pretty good chance they make the finals last year. So like, they're really, I think a lot of people have kind of evaluated this Celtics team with the wrong frame of mind, as if there's some sort of intense urgency, when that's not the case. Like, they've got a few years here to get this done. And if they don't get it done this year, let's say they run into a really good team in the Eastern Conference Finals that bests them for some reason, it'll just be another stepping stone in their development as they eventually get to that destination. But like, imagine 28-year-old Jason Tatum. Just think about it. He's going to be 32 points a game. He's going to be one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. He's going to be a much higher level playmaker. He's going to be a dude who's been in damn near a decade of playoff wars. Like, this is all part of the journey of a basketball player's development, learning how to play grown-up basketball.
Absolutely. And you mentioned JB a couple times today. I know you did that great video about his efficiency playing out of the post. And one thing I wanted to bring up, we were talking about the crunch time offense, and Jaylen Brown right now is shooting 65% from the free throw line in the fourth quarter, not getting many attempts, only one attempt per game, but he's only, I think he's only averaging either two or three shot attempts in the fourth quarter. It really seems like the Celtics are unwilling to go to Jaylen Brown to create advantages and play advantage basketball out of the post in the fourth quarter. My theory is because of his poor free throw shooting, and they don't want to go to it too frequently. But you know, what, Adam, I'll start with you. With Jaylen's free throws, it's got to be mental, right? There's no way it's not.
Yeah. I mean, he's too good of a shooter in general for his free throws to be this low and it be form-based. Generally, your free throws are predictive of your overall shooting talent. If your free throw percentage is high, you feel confident that your shooting form is going to... Part of it might be mental. Maybe he's just not a good free throw shooter. Like, that could just legit be it. And I'm going to be honest, I'll watch the games the next day. I don't sit through free throws ever. I don't need to. What am I going to learn? I can see the statistic at the end once I check the box score. There's to make sure.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need free throws are not teaching me anything. So when it's not like I can sit here and start talking about Jaylen Brown's free throw form, because I've probably seen it twice all year and I've watched every game at least two times. Why would I sit through them? It makes no sense to me. So I'm just going to say,
Can I jump in on his form real quick?
Yeah.
Cause I was a shooting coach for a few years. And I was working with this one coach who was a big proponent of the sway in the shot. So if you think about the way Kevin Durant shoots, right, he's kind of got his shoulder turned in a little bit. He's not necessarily like Steve Nash, like Steve Kerr, super square to the basket, elbow tucked in and all that. And with Jaylen, when I see his form, especially on like his fadeaways, when he fades away from the basket, he's square, but that does allow this like fluidity in his shoulders that I don't think is there on his free throws. I think his free throws are just very stiff. And the way that he shoots his free throws, to me, it's like he's really focusing on fundamentals and mechanics. And, you know, we've all played basketball. Jason, you played at the college level. When you're thinking about your shot, that's when your shot is going to go awry. And to me, I see a shooter at the free throw line that is literally thinking and telling himself, I need to shoot a certain way. And you can see him like really focus on getting his hand under the ball. And I think with Jaylen, he's adjusted the way that he's approached to the ball. Sometimes he'll like bring it kind of away from his body before bringing it up to his head. Sometimes he'll go more through his chest, you know, in one motion. And I think I've seen so much tinkering because I'm like really attuned to the micro movements of shooters just because of my time as a shooting coach. And I think I see far too much like micro variance to his shot that to me screams it's not going to be fixed until he figures out to just let that thing go. Jason, what are your thoughts?
So again, I you guys are more qualified to speak on this because you've watched Jaylen Brown so closely over the last couple of years as a free throw shooter. That said, my kind of working theory with Jaylen Brown is he is very much a creative jump shooter. And I actually love the juxtaposition of him next to Tatum, because I think Tatum is a very rigid jump shooter. And what I mean by that is like, Tatum gets to his muscle memory, and as long as he gets to his muscle memory, he's got a really good chance of going in. And a lot of times on-ball defenders will be able to do little things like digging down at the basketball or something to kind of disrupt his gather. And then when Tatum gets out of that flow, he can be pretty bad as a shooter. Whereas like Jaylen Brown, it doesn't matter if he's pivoting over his left shoulder, pivoting over his right shoulder, stepping back, fading, whatever it is. He's just got such a natural kind of like fluidity is the word that you used, Adam, which I agree with. It's like there's almost like a flow to him shooting off the dribble that feels way more natural than even Tatum's does. And so specifically with that, I think going from that sort of like lift, fade, rhythm to suddenly a rigid, standstill, static kind of shooting situation at the foul line is just a tough transition for him. I'll share a personal story here just to kind of like to drive that point home.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I, over the years, have figured out that you have to specifically work on every single type of shot. You can't just work on shooting as a single entity. There's movement shooting with all the different footwork, going to the left, going to the right. There's off the dribble shooting. There's static standstill shooting, and there's free throw shooting. There's differences in all of them. And yes, there's a certain end result that you want to look the same every time, but the stuff that happens before does look different. And so I think, like, honestly, like, if I had to guess, Jaylen Brown has, and you guys can probably speak to this, if I had to guess, Jaylen Brown has probably prioritized his work towards catch and shoot shooting and off the dribble shooting, and probably hasn't devoted as much time as he needs to literally just sit there and shoot free throws, because that is a very different type of shooting, in my opinion, than those other types of shooting.
Yeah, definitely. And there's always videos, you know, the Celtics media team's always putting out videos because they know it's a narrative right now that Jaylen is struggling from the free throw line. You'll see videos at most practices of Jaylen Brown being at the free throw line working on that shot. But even those videos don't really like inspire confidence to me. When I see him shooting the practice shots, I'm like, this should just be going in every single time. Like, I can sit there and make 30 free throws in a row, no problem. You know what I mean? And I haven't touched a basketball in a competitive environment in a long time. So I think with Jaylen, I'm hoping that it doesn't become, I saw some people drop right into the chat, like, would people go hack a Jaylen or anything like that? I hope it doesn't get to that level where it's like Ben Simmons, Chuck Knobloch stuff going on. So I really hope it doesn't get to that level. Okay, we've got, Jason, we only got you for a couple more minutes, right?
I can hang out for a little bit.
Okay, cool. So the last thing that we wanted to talk about here was rebounding. But Adam, I saw you kind of looking at the chat a little bit. Maybe you weren't. Maybe I was missing.
No, we've got people showing Jason some love, so I was just kind of getting that on the screen, make sure you could see that some people showing some love out here. So we've got Crispin, Hoops Tonight is one of the best NBA shows out. He's a big fan. Mateo saying the same. Jay Berry's enjoying the show too. I think the people are just jiving, man. People just chilling in the chat. I don't know why there's so many people watching on Twitter and no one's decided to comment. That's just an insult. You know, that's
no, it's
me.
Great. Jason, yeah, I checked out a few of your videos recently and I was really impressed, man. So the kind of like, I just want to know from someone who's doing the same stuff that you're doing. When you're doing these videos, dude, you're like 25 minutes, no cuts, no edits. And you're just like talking.
Yeah,
how do you do that?
So I don't know. But
out of body experience every time you do it. It was like really the first time I watched your video, I was like, this dude hasn't edited one iota of this. There was like a couple uhs, a couple yes, but like for the most part, it was just a 25 minute perfectly delivered monologue.
So the only thing that I'll say is, like, I do an enormous amount of prep for every single show. Like usually if there's an hour long episode, I've done between 4 and 5 hours of prep. And so as a result, I have these like extensive notes that I take. And so honestly, like, I almost just kind of go line item by line item through my notes. And like, whenever I finish whatever thought I'm at, I look over and it's like, okay, next I'm talking about Dante DiVincenzo, you know, XYZ, move over, talk about it, go back and forth. And honestly, what's been a really nice treat is we've finally, after a couple of years, been able to kind of incorporate some film. And that's been so much better because, like, I honestly feel bad sometimes where I'm like, okay, second quarter, 7 minutes left. This guy's in this corner. Here's this. They're doing this, this, and this. And I'm trying to explain it and it's just difficult. And so, like, now we have a little point of visual reference, but I don't really have an answer for you. It's just kind of been the way the show's always been. I don't know how else to say it.
So we've got a nickname for you here, One Take Timph. I'm a little bit jealous, man. Like, that's I had to do name. a I was recording like a promo video for like a brand thing yesterday, and it was 15 seconds long, and it took me 19 takes for 15 seconds. I don't know how you do 25. And obviously that was about like something that I don't really know much about. I'm kind of just being given a script and I'm working off that. With a basketball conversation, I could probably get 8 minutes, 9-10 minutes, and then I'm gonna stumble over my words and sound stupid. 25 minutes is wild, dude, in one take. That's insane.
One of the things that really helped me, because like I am a perfectionist just by nature. It's just I'm very OCD and I want things to be a certain way. And so when I would record early on with Hoops Tonight, I used to record myself with QuickTime and then I would upload to a folder and then the producers would work it up. And so like if I made any mistake during the first 3-4 minutes of the show, I would like cut out and restart. And I'd be so irritated because like I'd be like, am I really starting this record for like the fifth time right now? And so what ended up really helping me, because you realize really quickly it just doesn't matter. Like it doesn't matter if during your announcements you stumble over your words or if you like have some sort of issue or you accidentally misquote a stat or whatever. It's really not that big of a deal and you're going to make mistakes anyway. And so what really helped for me is we started scheduling our records. And we do them on Zoom calls now. And so they're not live, but they're effectively live. And then obviously we go live on YouTube at the end of the night sometimes. So like that got me out of my head in terms of the perfectionist thing. And just I'm not going to like go to the producer like, hey, Paul, I need you to cut it off. I messed up. I need to restart. Right. So like it helped me kind of get out of my head and chill out a little bit. Like to call it, Colin Coward used to say this. It's like fire away, then stop thinking about it. And look forward to the next day. Cause like, if you start obsessing about it, it's just not good for your mental health.
I love it. I love it. Thanks for the advice. Okay. So let's end the show with this. Let's end the show with some, NBA playoff, predictions. How about that? You know,
okay.
Adam, out of the Eastern Conference, who do you got in the Eastern Conference finals?
Boston.
And?
Oh, I thought you said out of the Eastern Conference. Sorry. So
no, in the Eastern Conference.
Finals, okay, sorry. So I'm just going with what I want. So I'm going Boston, New York. That's what I want in my heart. That's the game I want.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way. Jason?
So I'm about to, when I'm done with you guys, I'm going to finish my series preview on the Knicks Sixers. And when I was watching tape this morning, like I went into that film session thinking I was going to pick the Knicks. And like I'm leaning... We'll see when I actually finish up here in a little bit, but like I'm leaning towards taking the Sixers. I think they've got some bodies to put on Jalen Brunson. I think they've got more advantages that they can get to. And Embiid just brings a certain, you know, kind of physical imposition. Like you saw, he played like crap last night and he still made a bunch of big plays late just because he's bigger than everybody. Right. Yeah. So I'm actually like half tempted to pick the Sixers to make it all the way to the conference finals.
I'm definitely going to watch.
Is his health, right?
That is the concern. But like, even as like when I was watching, so much of what New York does is like capitalizing on the margins. I think they're the best basketball character team in the league. They do the right thing on every single possession. And as a result, they never lost a game they weren't supposed to lose. But they were 7-17 this year against teams in the top 10 in point differential, according to Cleaning the Glass. Now, Knicks fans will be like, well, when we had OG, we were really, really good. And like, I'm not trying to undercut that. And we'll see when I finish up my film session here if I change my mind. But when I was watching the tape, I'm like, it's going to be Jalen Brunson against great perimeter defenders every single time. And the Sixers are just going to have more ways that they can go to generate offense.
So the three defenders covering Brunson, is Melton going to be back?
I'm actually not sure. So they started Kelly Oubre in the one win that they had this year. It was that super crazy. I think it was like 79-73.
Oubre's underrated, like man. I love
old
Oubre.
School. You know what's crazy though? When I watched the film, I actually thought Batum did a better job. So I think the direction this series ends up going eventually is they end up putting Batum in for either Harris or Lowry, and then they start Batum on Brunson because he has the length to bother him with rear view contests in a way that some of these other guards can't. And then I think in that case you put Oubre on OG Anunoby, but we'll see. Again, it's going to be a really close series, but I'm leaning towards Philly at this point.
Okay, All right. Well, I'm excited to tune in for that video. Well, Jason, thank you so much for joining us today, man. I know you're a busy guy. You got to get going. Adam, do you have any last things you want to say? Any more compliments you want to pay Jason?
Well, I mean, I was reading stuff off the chat. I mean, let's just get that wrong. That first of all, I'm going Clippers Nuggets Western Conference Finals.
Okay. So I got the Mavs.
How are the Clippers beating the Mavs?
I don't know. I'm talking about what I want, not what's going to happen.
Especially with Kyrie, I mean, with Kawhi being down with this knee injury, if he's not going to be full strength, I don't see them beating.
But it's what I want in my heart. It's what I want to see. And
they have way more question marks. I also am like super high on this like PJ Washington Kleba together playing in the front court kind of look that they have.
That's a good.
It took me a while. People were telling me the Mavs were great, and then they went on that East Coast road trip and couldn't guard anybody. And I was like, no, I don't believe in these guys. But down the stretch of the season, they won me over.
And now Kyrie, not being a part of Team USA, he had some interesting comments that came out. Now he's just like going to be motivated to just stick it to everybody in the playoffs. And you know, when Kyrie Irving is playing basketball and just focusing on basketball, there's not a more fun player to watch in the NBA. So, you know, I kind of am back on the Kyrie train, just getting to enjoy him.
As you're not allowed there.
That's against the rules.
I'm okay with it. And Luke is playing great basketball as well. All right, well, Jason got to get out of here. We're gonna
really quick Suns Wolves. Who you guys got in Suns Wolves?
Oh man,
do I have to go with?
I'm gonna go Suns. I'm gonna go Suns.
I'm gonna go with what I want and say Suns.
I think the Suns are gonna beat them. I think the Suns are gonna beat them in 5 or 6. I think they're the better team, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, I got the Suns winning that as well. All right, we're going to play you out with some music from my band down here in Austin, Texas. We are called Black Sheep Optimist.
Yo, I flipped it like Simone Biles.
Miles from a throne, see me smile because I found peace.
While I'm at home,
I rhyme a little bit different, got that sound of my own.
And with the time limit, I'm shifting, man, I'm proud that I've grown. It's that right time to rise to the occasion, put the pen up on the paper and flip the occupation. I'm getting motivated, it's goal to be creative. I'm making this a moment, there's no time for waiting. See the city from a bird's third eye word. I learn to observe what the many won't find. Don't mind me flying to the moon, doing fine. See, sliding on the ground. I'll take another cup of ice, please, God. I lost a dollar and a dime piece. They found me on